there. Welcome in to this Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hope you had a good Monday and that Tuesday is treating you well. Hope that you and yours are well and that it's all good. I think that's what it boils down to. Oh, man. Yesterday just couldn't happen. I tried to figure out a way to make it happen, and there just was not a way to make it happen. What with the Rona and everything, making everything we do more complicated, it just couldn't happen. I had semi-annual dental appointments, cleanings and stuff like that, and I had this thing booked, and it was booked for... I booked it for 10 o'clock thinking, that's going to be fine. And then they sent me an email with a questionnaire, a health questionnaire that I had to fill out before I would be allowed on the premises. and then the instructions about what I have to do when I get there. You have to wait in the car. Remember when I told you about my wife going for her coronavirus test and having to sit and wait in the car all day long? When they said wait in the car and call the office or text us to let us know you're there and we will summon you when it's time when we can bring you in. And I thought to myself, oh, this is going to be rich. I'd better get there early and I'd better just be prepared. And so that's what I did. And I just decided we'll just take the stories I have set up and see what I can use for Tuesday, and we'll just rearrange the world. And so no podcast yesterday. Everything went well at the dentist yesterday. No problems. Nobody fussed at me for anything. Oh, you need to take care of your teeth. None of that. Everything was just fine. So all was good. And then also yesterday, I wrapped up the laundry door project, which I've told you about. I built the laundry door, and I really need to post pictures. I'll try to remember to do that on the Facebook page this morning. I have pictures in my phone. I took some pictures to show somebody today. I've got an appointment, and this a friend of mine. I want to show him what the progress is on that particular progress. So I'll share those with you in just a bit this morning. And speaking to those who could possibly. Potentially, by some wild stretch of the imagination, actually be listening on Facebook Live, because who knows? According to what I'm seeing, as far as Facebook's concerned, you don't get to listen to this anymore. So, at least that's what I'm seeing. So, if you're a podcast listener, thanks for sticking in with the podcast, and go over to the Facebook page, the Daily Perspective podcast Facebook page, and have a look. The pictures should be there by the time you hear this. Okay. All right. Just pictures of the door. I got it finished. My buddy Mike came over yesterday and helped move the door from where it was to where it needed to be. I built the door. The components of the door didn't weigh that much, but the door, when it was all put together, honestly, it didn't weigh all that much. It was just, it's just this big, big 6-foot by 6-foot square of wood that, or, you know, panel of wood that, that needed to be moved out of the garage and up the driveway and into the front of the house and up the stairs and into the kitchen and hung on the rail. It was already on the wall. And then after that, I spent the rest of the afternoon adjusting things because it needed to be adjusted a bit because it wasn't running true and was bumping something here and there, and little adjustments had to be made. And I finally wrapped those up because when Jane came home, we had errands to run last night, and so we took off and ran those errands. And when I got home, close to 8 o'clock, I was there I am with a wrench and washers and things like that, moving things around and spacing things and changing the things to make sure everything ran smoothly and didn't bump into door frames and things like that, because it has to be spaced out from the wall a little bit. These barn door things, by the way, they design them to stand off of the wall just a bit. They don't design them to stand off the wall and go past door frames, because they're assuming that you're covering an opening in the wall that doesn't have a frame around it. And they don't even address the possibility that another door may be somewhere within the path of the barn door. And that was the situation for us, was right next to the nook where the washer and dryer are, there's a storage closet. And that's where the ironing board hangs, and there's some appliances, some small appliances in there, and some of the larger bowls and things like that, larger cookware and stuff. It's in that particular storage area. And the doorknob had to come off of that. I put a magnetic latch on the door, so you just give it a little shove and it pops open, and that's kind of cool. And then but still there's a door frame around the door, which comes off of the wall, I don't know, 3/8 of an inch or so. And it was the bolt heads on the back of the door hardware were bumping the door frame of the little storage closet. So I had to make some adjustments to scooch the door out from the wall ever so slightly. And I figured out how to do that while we were sitting at dinner last night. I'm sitting there eating a taco, and I had this moment where, you know, I know what to do. And so when I got home, I thought, well, let me try that. And it worked. So that's good, because I thought I was going to have to just take the whole thing down and find a way to space things out. And I realized I could just move a little here and a little there, and I got it worked out. Anyway, 7 minutes to tell you nothing you really care about. Thanks for hanging in there. Whew. Man, oh man, what is going on with our world today? The Rona is still going crazy in America. In other countries, in Sweden, they're even talking about no masks anymore. Don't worry about the masks. Forget it. And remember, it was Sweden that didn't lock everybody down. They didn't tank their economy. They actually did something sane in response to it, which was they told everybody, here's the deal. This is what happens if you get it. Use your brain. And the people of Sweden said, well, we need to be careful, and we need to take care of our elderly people, because they're the ones who are most seriously affected. And people with secondary health conditions, which could make this seriously bad for them. You know, people with asthma and other things like that. We need to take care of our people. And that's what they did. And here in the United States, the politicians went crazy. A question I've been asking, or a rhetorical question I have been posing to friends here lately, is this: how do you take control of the whole world? How do you get the world to give you more power and control? The answer? You frighten it. And that is what politicians have been doing with the coronavirus. They have been using it. Unscrupulous politicians have been using the coronavirus to paint a fearful picture for Americans. And we're watching right now, if you are on social media, bless your heart, you have seen the pictures of people accosting people who are not wearing masks. Recently, there was a video of a couple having a meal at a picnic table in a park. And an elderly woman wearing a mask walks up to these people who are eating and throws hot coffee on them and accosts them for not wearing their masks. They're having a meal. They're having a picnic. It was crazy. And other things, people in stores screaming at people, running people out. It's just been insane. These people have been manipulated. They're in such fear. They're scared to death, and they are lashing out at other people who will not conform to their fear, which is psycho. Yeah. And then there are the other politicians who are not utilizing it utilizing this entire situation and using it as a fear factor to control people, these politicians are actually in fear themselves. They're afraid of what their constituents will say if they don't toe the line and follow the lead of those who are saying this could end the world if we don't pay attention to the experts. And those politicians are useless weasels who should be voted out of office, and people with real backbone should be put in their places, who will stand up to those who are using fear. You see, one of the things that's happening with fear right now is that the Democrats are trying to scare Americans into allowing a vote by mail scheme to be put into place on a national level. They want it instituted nationwide. Well, this is something that legally is extremely iffy. I don't think it can actually legally happen on a national level. I just don't think it can. Not without a whole lot of prep going on. As I've told you before, in order to make the vote by mail actually secure, there has to be a lot of groundwork laid. There has to be an infrastructure put into place to manage that vote that just is not there. The Democrats are trying to say, we vote by mail all the time. Absentee ballots take place all the time. Yada, yada, yada. What they're not telling you is that the vote by mail systems that are happening have the benefit. In some states, they have been voting by mail for quite some time. Those states still have problems. That's one thing they don't tell you. The other thing they don't tell you is that before they instituted the vote-by-mail systems that are in place, they had the run-up time to establish the infrastructure needed to manage that vote-by-mail system, which involves more people on the government payroll, more security, and so forth. A lot has to happen to make it feasible. And it's still actually questionable if it really is feasible in the places it's actually being done. The politicians there in those places all praise it because they're politicians. But when you really do look at the numbers, right now we're watching in some places elections that took place weeks and weeks ago, which have still not been decided because there are issues with the mail-in voting systems. There are people's votes which have been lost. There are people's votes which have been mishandled. There's a lot wrong that's going on with this whole vote-by-mail scheme, which, I remind you, is being instituted on the basis of fear generated by politicians who want to use the vote-by-mail system to win an election. Yeah, this is the whole purpose of the whole thing. They want to scare people into voting by mail because they know if they vote by mail, they can manipulate things. Now, is it really about winning an election? In the end, yes. The long of the short of it is yes. It's about winning an election. But were you aware that there is an actual legal loophole that the Democrats could take advantage of if it takes a long time to tabulate the vote for the presidential election? You see, tabulating the results of a mail-in vote could take a long time. It could possibly take months because of the inherent problems with the concept. As I've spelled out, the infrastructure is not there. And I ask you to also think about this. Have you ever had anything lost in the mail? Have you ever mailed something that didn't get there? Have you ever been mailed something that didn't get to you? Have you ever gotten your neighbor's mail? Has your neighbor ever gotten your mail? If you've answered yes to any of those questions, you can't trust the mail-in vote. And everybody can answer yes to one of those questions. Were you aware that if there has been no declaration of a winner by Inauguration Day, that the current resident of the White House must vacate the residence and the Speaker of the House becomes president on a temporary basis? Oh, Mark, that's a stretch. Maybe so. but it's there. Is it possible? Now, this is one of those things that falls under the conspiracy theory heading. Is it possible that the Democrats are hoping for mass confusion and problems with the voting process for mail-in voting so that they can shove President Trump out of the White House and put Nancy Pelosi in control until they can actually come up with a firm total which gives them what they want anyway? Considering how crooked the Democrats are, and how they will do anything to win, this is not a possibility we should just toss aside.
Everything is awesome.
Well, that's what they tell me.
Everything is cool when you're part of a team.
Just trust us. Everything is fine. Just do what we say. You're going to be fine. Trust us. We're trusting the experts. It is the Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective podcast, the fourth day of August, 2020. Good to have you along for the ride. Thank you so much for being there. Oh, man. What a day I got ahead of me today. I'm going to be studio bound pretty much for the day. I've got a lot of production to get done in-house today. And a project, now that I've finished, now that I've finished the door, the laundry door project, I have another little project that's just itching to get done. And I want to get started on it today. I don't think I'll get started on it today. We'll see. I mean, I've got a commercial to produce that I got to be honest with you, I'm having trouble wrapping my brain around it. And it's one of those things that it's not that somebody has given me a script. It's not nobody. I don't have any talking points. I don't have anything. I've just been told, go look at this. Here's the website. Here's the thing. Let's put that commercial together. Really? Wow. And that is one of those things where, as a producer, you can spend hours working on something and then present it, and they go, eh, okay, let's change all of these things that you just did. So. Welcome to my world. It is the it's the Daily Perspective podcast. I hope you're doing well. Looking at stories for today, and I had all this stuff stacked up for yesterday, and then pulled the plug on yesterday. And I you've seen all of the stuff that's happened. The Washington D.C. mayor exempted the people who attended the John Lewis funeral from their quarantine restrictions. You know, it's like, oh yeah, that was essential. But those of you, but nobody else is. You people are important, and it makes you wonder how real is all of this stuff. I mean, how real is it? If they'll give that exception to these people, aren't they human beings? Aren't they subject to the same possible sicknesses and infections that everybody else is? Aren't these people? I mean, these people all traveled out of state and then back again. And if you do that, you're supposed to quarantine yourself for 14 days. But these people, for some reason, the virus doesn't stick to them. Because, of course, they're Democrat politicians. Strange stuff. Democrats are coming out of the woodwork urging Joe Biden not to debate Trump. The New York Times has actually come out and said he doesn't need to. You're seeing this argument being made more and more and more. That, debates are a thing of the past. That's arcane. That says, you know, the people don't make decisions based on debates. Well, guess what? Most people actually do wait to make a decision until they've seen the first debate. You know that's true. I know that's true. Most people actually wait to see those two people stand off with each other and see how they perform to see where they want to put their vote. A lot of people make that decision after they've watched debates. They hold on. They've seen all the commercials, and the commercials, you can't trust commercials. They'll say anything in a commercial. And then you also know that a politician will say anything on the debate stage. They'll say anything. But there are so many clues that you can pick up from watching someone. You can, there are certain tells. You can tell when they're lying. You can tell about, you can tell in their responses to certain things being said. You can see certain clues about the character of that person and how they handle things by watching a debate that you don't get from watching a campaign stump speech or watching campaign ads. Those debates mean a lot to people who vote in America. And it's very telling, actually, I think it is the big tell, that everybody around Joe Biden is saying, you don't need to debate Trump. It's not a good idea. What are you doing? My dog, by the way, the Princess the Wonderhound, she's apparently got the scent of something in the studio. I must have a visitor. And she is, what'd you find over there, girl? Huh? You find something? Yeah, she's excited. She's found, probably during the break, I'll be doing something. There's probably a mouse or something in here. And she's, I don't need a cat. I have a mouse or dog. What? Okay. Sorry for the interruption. But she knocked something over under the edit desk over on the other side of the room. So the deal with Biden and debates is he can't. And we're beginning to hear more and more, like Dan Bongino, who knows everybody, he has contacts everywhere, is saying that he has contacts who are still in the Secret Service who are saying, things with Biden are getting much worse. So people all around him are starting to say, yeah, this whole debate thing is an old idea. It doesn't need to happen anyway. Oh, yeah, and Corona. Yeah, Rona's, no, we don't need to do that. So, yeah. Just keep an eye on that. I have a feeling they're going to use the coronavirus as an excuse for Joe Biden not to debate Donald Trump, because he can't debate Donald Trump. So they'll just use the coronavirus as an excuse. And there you have it. Other things, in Portland, Oregon, they disbanded the police gun violence unit. You know about that, back on July 1st. And after disbanding the gun violence unit, they finished the month with the most homicides in over 30 years. Portland Democrat Mayor Ted Wheeler announced in June he was authorizing radical changes on how policing was done in his city, including disbanding the city's gun violence reduction team. Now the city is grappling with a surge in violent crime. The Oregonian reported Portland police are scrambling to respond to 15 homicides in the city so far in July. That's the most killings in one month in more than three decades. So far this year, 24 people have died in homicides in Portland. Now, I realize that pales by comparison to Chicago. But we're not talking about Chicago. We're talking about the Pacific Northwest, Portland, Oregon. We're talking about a different place altogether. Still under progressive leadership. And the progressives are getting their way. And when progressives get their way, criminals have a heyday. While the city's been in the national spotlight for violent riots that have occurred over the past couple of months, the newspaper noted that overall person-to-person and property crimes were down compared to past years, but added homicides, assaults, burglaries, and vandalism, those are up. That's violent crime is up. The Oregonian, wow, why can't I say that word? The Oregonian added that the city had seen a total of 63 shootings in July, compared to 28 the year before. Police Chief Chuck Lovell noted late last week that the Bureau was forced to cut its gun violence reduction team at the direction of the city council. When Wheeler announced last month he was enacting numerous police reforms, he said he was, quote, hearing loudly and clearly from demonstrators that they want fundamental reform. Portland Police Chief Chuck Lovell blasted the move during an interview on a podcast, saying that disbanding the unit was going to hurt how the department could investigate shootings. And he was right. Let's get back to what Wheeler said. He said he was hearing loudly and clearly from demonstrators that they want fundamental reform. He was hearing loudly and clearly from who? From demonstrators. And who are these demonstrators? These demonstrators are people who are unhappy with everything and want everything to be changed. And the more we allow them to tell us that they want changed, the more we see that they want fundamental change at every level. They want socialism, is what they want. They want a Marxist government. That's what they want. The more you let them talk, the more they reveal themselves to be Marxists. Now, politicians, afraid of the people and willing to do anything to get a vote, those politicians will do anything to get a vote. And so this politician, Wheeler, has done what he thought was necessary to get the vote. And in the process, there have been a total of 63 shootings in the month of July, more than twice the number of the year before. This all lands right at the feet of Democrat Mayor Ted Wheeler in Portland, Oregon. It is his responsibility. You see, these people have made demands, and I have a list of them. I'll get into them after the break. They have a list of, what is this, 19. They couldn't come up with one more and make it around to 20. 19 demands. And when I say they're Marxists and they want things to change fundamentally and they want a Marxist government, I'm not exaggerating. Their demands are ridiculous. In a sane society, none of this is going to work. But we're not dealing with people who are living in a sane society. We're dealing with people who are living in a fantasy world. More of that comes up after the break. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast for Tuesday, the 4th day of August, 2020. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there. Good to have you along today on this 4th day of August, 2020. A little out of breath. I had to do some running around during the break. Oh, man. All right, back to those crazy demands I was telling you about from these demonstrators in Portland, Oregon. Here we are. Number one, redirect over $7 million from police bureau and $5 million from other city funds to communities of color. And what does that mean? They want $12 million from the police bureau and other city funds for the communities of color. Number two, call on criminal justice system partners to match the city commitment and reinvest in communities of color. So that's another $12 million. Call for a community-led review and re-envisioning of core patrol services convened by the Portland Committee on Community Engaged Policing. In other words, they want the kind of people who would show up to a city council meeting to determine how policing is done. I want you to think about that. Now, please don't take this the wrong way. I'm not saying that everybody who shows up to a city council meeting is a moron. But I am saying that most people who show up to a city council meeting have an agenda. They have something in mind, a purpose for being there, and that purpose is usually changed to a specific thing which doesn't take into account many other factors. Number four, hire a third party to review recruitment and retention strategies to ensure that the city's workforce reflects the communities it serves. In other words, diversity. Not qualification, but skin color. That's what they're after. Number five, support outreach and non-law enforcement responses like the Portland Street Response Pilot and the Navigation Team. Number six, advocate for greater access to community-based behavioral health and harm reduction services located in the communities of color. Social workers. They want more social workers in the hood. Number seven, decline renewal of the intergovernmental agreement with TriMet, dissolving the PPB transit division and putting transit officers back on patrol. 8, dissolve gun violence reduction team and fundamentally reshape our approach to reduce gun violence in collaboration with the Office of Youth Violence Prevention, District Attorney-elect, and other partners. In other words, put social workers in control of gun violence. Now, we've already seen what happens when that happens. So the gun violence reduction team, we've already seen what happens. You get rid of that, and your murder rate doubles. 9, remove police officers from schools. Dissolving Youth Services Division and School Resource Officer Program. In other words, remove the thin blue line, the last line of defense, to keep idiot thug young people from bringing guns into schools and killing each other. That's what that boils down to. And you're thinking, oh, well, they can put in metal detectors. Here in the Birmingham, Alabama area where I live, they've done that. You know what happens after a few weeks? Once the news cameras go away, once people aren't paying attention anymore, they turn the metal detectors off. Oh, that's not true. Yes, it is. At one of the schools in our area, a young lady lost her life because a young man walked into the school through the metal detectors carrying a gun, and he killed her. He got through the metal detectors carrying a gun because the metal detectors were turned off. Some little gaggle of people decided somewhere, we don't need those anymore. Don't tell anybody. It's an insult to everybody. This is terrible. They think horrible things of our people. They think our kids are all killers. We don't need the guns. We don't need the metal detectors. We can turn them off. And they did. And a young lady died. 10, immediately return Equity and Inclusion Office to the Chief's Office with a direct report to the Chief of Police and position that work alongside the Community Services Division. More social workers in charge. Require explicit council authorization for acquisition of military equipment consistent with Executive Orders 13688 issued by President Barack Obama in May of 2015. In other words, no more police buying riot gear. No more police departments buying gear to fight the thugs who would destroy your city. Because His Holiness Barack Obama set the example for us. 12, create local legislation enshrining the Portland Committee on Community Engaging Policing in Portland City Code, making it a permanent community oversight body. Enshrine the Portland Committee on Community Engaged Policing. This, once again, is small, petty, bureaucratic politicians telling the police department how to do their job. 13, create local legislation for reforms to use the consent searches to the use of consent searches in traffic stops. This, again, is people who don't know how police work works and how police deal with people on a daily basis telling the police how to do their jobs. 14, ban carotid restraints, including chokeholds, as methods of control, and direct Chief of Police to revise the use of force policy to reflect this change. This is, once again, idiots telling the police how to do their job. Carotid constraints are not chokeholds. They call them chokeholds because that paints a mental picture that someone's wind is being choked off, that they can't breathe. That's the picture they paint. And I know you're thinking, George Floyd. George Floyd was saying he couldn't breathe when he was standing up and nobody was touching him. Watch the video. It's available now. Carotid restraints cut the blood flow. The brain's response is almost instantaneous. It's just a matter of 2 or 3 seconds, and the brain says, we're shutting everything down to protect it. Boink! And the person whose the blood flow has been cut off passes out. And they pass out for just long enough for someone to get handcuffs on them and get them in control. That's what those holds are for. They work. They're effective. There is no permanent damage done. But because they can paint this picture of abuse and paint this picture of horrible conditions and horrible treatment, and people are ignorant of the facts, they manage to get this kind of crap passed. Number 15, create local racial profiling ban with private right of action for intentional discrimination by law enforcement. This is once again painting a picture, making people believe that there is racial profiling. And you have to go back to the statistics that we've talked about many times here on this podcast, that over 50% of violent crime is committed by people from 13% of our population. It's not racial profiling when the statistics say it's likely that the person you're looking for is black. That's not racial profiling. That's fact. Number 16, support Oregon Legislative People of Color Caucus. Call for a special session to take up urgently needed reform legislation. Yeah, this is race-based outcomes is what this is. Number 17, support Oregon Legislative People of Color Caucus in pursuit of legislation requiring Oregon Attorney General to investigate officer-involved deaths or serious injuries of civilians. This is just more the police are evil and they're picking on black people. I refer you to those statistics. Number 18, support Oregon Legislative People of Color Caucus in pursuit of legislation ensuring integrity of local discipline actions by prohibiting arbitrators from overturning disciplinary decisions against officers if the law enforcement agency and arbitrator both agree that misconduct occurred. Well, if you want to get involved on a legal basis, take it to court. Do what everybody else has to do. And finally, number 19, support reform of federal qualified immunity doctrine. Yeah. In other words, the police can't be immune from certain things. Now, but please understand me. Bad cops are bad cops. But painting all cops with the same brush is wrong because of a tiny number of bad cops. You have bad people in every walk of life. You have bad politicians. Look on the Democrat side of the aisle. I mean, look at the stories we have now of voter fraud, mail fraud, things like that. It's happening, and we're seeing report after report. Who's doing it? Democrats. So, look at the stats. Look at how things are going. I mean, when you paint everybody with a broad brush and say that all of the police need to be put under these strict controls, then you're doing exactly what Democrats always do, and that is instating a one-size-fits-all solution for a problem that can't be solved with a one-size-fits-all solution. If you want to solve the problems of bad cops getting off of the charges that have been filed against them, bad cops, not all cops, just bad cops, I would suggest that you look into how police unions are involved. Because the police unions are involved at that level, making sure bad cops keep their jobs. Look at that, not at the cops. And that's just part of it. Just part of it. You know, this is all about Portland, Oregon, but if you look at the broader scale, if you look at all of the Democrat-controlled cities in America that have been having trouble, you look across the board, you will see that homicide rates are hitting decades-long highs in these large cities across the United States as local officials are struggling with the fallout of a pandemic and massive anti-police protests. And as these progressive politicians attack the problems and they blame police and they disband units which are successful in keeping crime under control, the spikes across America, not just in Portland, but across America, the homicide rates are spiking in 50 of the biggest U.S. cities by double digits. This is progressive government. They don't have answers to the situation. that actually really work in the real world, because they don't see the world through the lens of reality. It's all theory and fantasy for progressives. Welcome back to this Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. I had to evict the dog, by the way. She was driving me crazy. It's a Tuesday, August 4th edition of the podcast. Good to be back in the studio again. I'm pretty much going to be spending all day here today. I get to start it by doing this, though, so that's a good thing. Okay, let's get back to the reason all of this started, okay? And it was in Minneapolis, George Floyd. Police are called because please understand this. The police were called not because a fake 20 was passed at a convenience store. That was part of the story, yes. But when the police arrived at the convenience store, they were told by the people at the convenience store, they were concerned about this guy because he was really out of it. He was acting really, really strange. He was not himself. That he was out of his mind, so to speak. And what started the whole thing, they told the police in the process that he had passed a bad 20 and they went to chase him down. And that's how the whole bad 20 thing figures into this. So yeah, he committed a crime by passing a counterfeit bill to buy some stuff at a convenience store. He goes back and sits down in a car with some people who the police reports say were known. They were known to the police, known individuals. That means they've been in trouble with the cops before, so the cops know them. And it goes from there. Now, the video has been released, and of course it's been leaked. It's not released by the police department, and it's coming back to us from the Daily Mail, a British publication. And now we are seeing essentially what we were told months ago in the police report of one of the officers who was filed. Now, I don't know if you remember this, but one of the officers, his police report, ended up getting released or leaked to the media. And we had it here and we read through it and talked about the different aspects of it. And one of the things that that police officer said was that George Floyd was behaving in a bizarre manner. And there is a term which still slips my mind for how these people who are on a cocktail of drugs will behave, and it's manic. And part of the side effect is that they don't behave rationally, normally. They don't feel pain the way you and I normally would. So using methods to subdue them, which would induce pain to make them respond, don't work. And so what happens is that they have to be subdued and held in some other way. In many cases, on the ground, with police officers putting their weight upon them to keep them from moving, because they are a danger not only to themselves, but potentially to other people, because they're not behaving normally and incapable of behaving normally or feeling pain or considering the danger factor for other people and things that they may do. They are under the influence of a cocktail of drugs which make them dangerous. Just dangerous, not only to themselves, but to other people. And so this police report described that process, described what happened, and from what I've been seeing from the video is just showing, yep, that's what happened. He was in a car. He was taken out of the car. He was suspected of a crime, approached by an officer with a gun, because he just committed a crime. What else has he got going on? Has he got a gun? He's argumentative. He's taken out of the car. Remember, he's been in a car. And then at one point, he starts talking about how he can't breathe. He's standing up. He's talking about various problems he's got. And then when they try to put him in the car, he says he's claustrophobic and he can't sit in the car. He just got out of a car with other people. And they finally end up subduing him on the ground and holding him there. And that's where everything comes down to to what you already know. Anybody following the story, you've known for some time that according to the medical examiner's report, George Floyd was not strangled to death, did not die from asphyxiation. That's what the media declared with great confidence in the immediate aftermath. It was found that Floyd, who had a pre-existing heart condition and also had three illicit drugs in his system, including fentanyl, which is 50 times more potent than morphine, and known to cause respiratory distress. He died of cardiopulmonary arrest, complicating law enforcement subdual. That's what the report says. Complicating law enforcement subdual, restraint, and neck compression. A medical examination performed by an examiner hired by Floyd's family did contradict those findings and claimed that Floyd did, in fact, die of asphyxiation. Now, I want you to think about this for just a moment. Floyd's family paid for another medical examiner. Where did the money come from? And if they paid someone else to perform an examination, why did they do so? They did so because they wanted to find another result. They wanted a different outcome. That's why. And so they paid for the outcome they wanted. Or the advocates for George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter movement wanted a different outcome. And so they paid for one. That was the status of things prior to this week's developments. The disturbing video, without prior context, a bunch of assumptions, not much more. And those assumptions were considered reason enough to burn cities down. The new footage doesn't necessarily clarify things. In fact, it does the opposite, adding complications and nuances to an issue that was once assumed to be utterly straightforward. The body cameras worn by officers Alex Kung and Thomas Lane, the first two cops on the scene, show Floyd agitated and uncooperative from the first moment that officers arrive in response to a call from a business owner who accused Floyd of trying to pass counterfeit bills. Floyd is in his car when the law enforcement showed up. One of the officers draws his weapon because Floyd is initially hesitant to show his hands. Once Floyd places his hands on his head, the gun is holstered. After much coaxing, he's eventually removed from his car and taken over to the police cruiser. Floyd appears to have trouble walking on his way over to the police car. He shouts, "Ow!" and seems to be in pain, even though he's only being grabbed by the arm. Once at the vehicle, he repeatedly refuses to get inside, saying he's claustrophobic, though he'd just been sitting in his own car without any apparent difficulty. And on the contrary, he was actually extremely reluctant to get out of his own vehicle, which is odd for somebody who's claustrophobic. At one point, as officers tried to convince him to get in the car, Floyd says he'd rather lay on the ground. He also says several times he's going to die and that he can't breathe, all before he was on the ground. He ends up on the ground because he either falls or pushes himself out of the other side of the police cruiser as officers struggle to get him inside. From that point, the scene unfolds, as we all saw on the initial video 2 months ago. As previously stated, none of this conclusively exonerates the officers of any or and all wrongdoing, but it does establish a few facts. It might mitigate their culpability. One, George Floyd was not fully cooperative and clearly intoxicated. Two, the officers were calm and reasonable for most of the interaction. And three, George Floyd claimed that he couldn't breathe and was going to die well before he had a knee on his neck. The officers never did or said a single thing that any reasonable person could construe as racist. Now, that third point in particular warrants further consideration. Floyd said he was too claustrophobic to get in the police car. He might die, couldn't breathe, even though he'd just been sitting in a car. He was screaming out in pain, even though the officers at that point weren't doing anything that could have caused him physical pain. We should note that he also said his mom just died, even though she'd been dead for 2 years. The officers wouldn't have known that latter detail, but the point is that cops hear nonsense like this from suspects every day, all day, every day. This can create a boy who cried wolf situation, where it's harder to tell when a suspect is actually in distress. When Floyd was on the ground saying he was going to die, it was no different from what he was saying while he was standing. or what he was saying in the car. These facts may not be exculpatory, but they certainly are relevant. The narrative, as it was originally presented, does not take any of these details into account. It demands that we see the event as nothing more or less than a wanton act of random cruelty with nothing precipitating it and not even an ounce of blame or responsibility to be shared by Floyd himself. In reality, Floyd may still be the victim of some degree of negligence, but it seems that the murder charge is going to be difficult to prove. The truth just isn't that simple. It rarely is. So, what the video does tell us is that this wasn't racist. That he wasn't mistreated. And that he was, as they say, acting out in weird ways. You should probably go watch that video today. And then let's get back together tomorrow for the next edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Shall we? Have a good one. We'll see you then. God bless. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.